and the high desert and the great American Southwest.
I bid you all good evening, good afternoon, good morning, whatever the case may be, wherever you are in the wide, wide world which we cover. This is Midnight in the Desert, and I'm Art Bell, and I only have two rules for this show. Abide by them. No bad language, and only one call per show. That's it. Those are the rules. Now, I have some people that I always like to thank. The great sound that you hear coming from this program, and it is great sound, is assisted and transported and, in fact, pretty much created by Telos. Great sound. Joe Talbot here in Pahrump, Nevada, thank you. Of course, Telos is a worldwide corp as well. Keith Rowland, my webmaster of forever. Dr. J, who does a great job as my producer. All of you, of course, the Belgab website. Shout out, guys. Stream guys, they do a lot of delivery of packets for us. LV.net. They both deliver, and well, I guess it arrives and leaves by LV.net. So, and then, of course, Peter Eberhardt, he's our sales guy. Now, it's getting to be a long list, huh? So, coming up tonight, we're going to be looking at abductions. Actually, we have an abductee. He wasn't going to be the original guest, but he is now. He's not the original guest, but he's coming along now with Grant Cameron. Grant investigates people who are abducted, and so I thought it would be useful, and my producer produced somebody at the last moment for me, Adam Ambrose, and we'll ask him about his abductions, plural. Now, one last thing that I must get to, and that is how to call the program when you get around to calling the program. This is something you can do right now, actually. Put Skype on your smartphone. The coolest, best way to call this program is put Skype on your phone. And then, please note the numbers for Skype, because what you can do is act like you're going to add me as a contact. And even though I don't respond, it doesn't matter, because then it appears on your list and you can just dial it at your whim. So, in North America, Canada, the U.S., we have MITD55. That's what you would, that's my Skype name, MITD55. If you're elsewhere in the world, we have MITD55. MITD55. So, there you have it. Off in a moment. To our guests, but just a couple more things. You know, there is a theory, right, about time jumping and the Bermuda Triangle. Well, there's the case of, brought to us by Anomalous.com, Bruce Gernon and his impossible jump forward in time as he, get this, flew his small plane toward Bimini. That's just about where it always occurs. The reported being surrounded by a strange, thick cloud and ending up miles away with no accounting for the fact that a 75-minute trip had only taken 45 minutes. Was it caused by some supernatural force? The cloud itself? We don't know. But he was in the place where that stuff happens. The Obama administration has decided that the NSA has to stop listening, examining, and will ultimately be forced to destroy millions of American calling records that it has collected under a controversial program leaked by former agency contractor, hero, traitor, you pick it, Edward Snowden. He's one of the two. With reference to the recent head shakers, you know, the movie theater killings, one professor of psychiatry calls it the conversation we're stuck with, a teachable moment growing out of horror. You know, and that's really all they can say about it. They don't know, you know, what causes someone to do something crazy like that. 2 4-plus earthquakes in Oklahoma. But you know what, folks? They were preceded by a gigantic bang. Remember we talked about, you and I talked about bangs, right? With Linda Howe and earthquakes. Well, there you have it. A big bang followed by 2 4-point earthquakes or better. One more calling tip, by the way, folks, and then away we go. And that is when you call the phone here, please, do me a big favor and let it ring until it's answered. I know sometimes you have to then redial if it doesn't get answered, but that's how it works. Let it ring till it's answered. We don't screen calls, so kaboom, you're just on the air like that. All right, coming up in a moment will be our guests. And it's going to be an interesting night. If you ever wanted to really know about abductions, you're going to find out as much as you wanted to know, I suspect, this night on Midnight in the Desert. I'm Art Bell.
And it's very late, so I'm sleeping now. But you're awake, so call my daddy because he's awake too. The number is 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952. Call Art.
You know who that was, right? That was not Ross with a headache. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and this is Midnight in the Desert, and away we go. So, what a night indeed. Let's begin here. Grant Cameron, he's going to be the main guest tonight. He is a recipient of the 2012 Leeds Conference International Researcher of the Year Award and the 2013 UFO Congress Researcher of the Year. Wow. He became a UFO researcher back in 75 after a personal sighting. Yep, that'll do it. He has extensively researched the role of the Canadian government, the President of the U.S., and the intelligence agencies in the cover-up in the UFO phenomenon as well, and the role of consciousness in UFO reports. And I'm particularly interested in that part, consciousness. Let us bring on Grant and say good evening, Grant. Good to have you.
Good evening, Art, and it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Okay, well, you know, I know I sprung this on you, but I thought it'd be pretty cool, since you're going to talk about this subject, if we would reach out and actually get a subject, and we have. His name is Adam Ambrose, and he is with us right now. Adam is an abductee. Adam, hello.
Good evening.
Good evening. And can everybody hear each other?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes, I can. Yes.
Okay. All right. Adam, let us begin with you. You've had many abductions, but there are two in particular that I want to talk to you about tonight. And one was a schoolyard landing of a craft with mass witnesses. Somewhere in the back of my brain, Adam, it seems to me I heard about this in a story on the internet or on the news or somewhere. Is that possible?
This story has not been out on the national level. It's been talked about a little on the internet recently.
Okay.
Although, you may be thinking of the aerial school landing. That's gotten a lot of press.
I may be. All right. Tell me what happened at your school.
This was 1970. I was quite young. Actually, I was 8 years old. This was New Jersey, upper New Jersey. I was, it was middle of the day. It happened at recess time. So we all got dismissed out. We were all on the playground, scattered about 50 to 70 children.
This is a long time ago, right? You're older than that now, right?
That's correct. I'm 52.
Okay. So it's a long time ago. Continue.
It is. Yes. I do have quite a vivid recall of it. However, I do have a good memory, and it's left a really strong impression on me, this particular memory.
Yep.
So there were quite a number of students out, several dozen, and it was a fairly large area, grass, a lot of trees all around, so it's kind of secluded. I don't remember who first noticed there was a strange object in the sky. Somebody pointed it out, and I remember looking up and seeing an object. It was about the size of a walnut at arm's length, maybe a little smaller at first when I first saw it. And it was dark. It was moving very slowly. It was like drifting. And at first I remember thinking, is that a blimp or is that like a hot air balloon?
Right.
I wasn't certain. It was pretty far off. So it comes closer and closer. And we're all just standing there watching it. I mean, everybody.
How many of you, roughly?
There was roughly 50 to 70 at least.
That's a lot of witnesses.
There may have been more.
Okay.
Yeah, and everybody's attention was on the sky. And this object, as it drifted closer, it got lower very, very gradually also. So it's almost as if it was trying not to frighten us, looking back in hindsight.
Yes.
Compared to some other sightings I had had.
Right.
And it just kept drifting closer, probably over the period of a minute or two. It took a while until it was over the treetops about 300, 400 yards away.
By that time, it's pretty big, right?
Yeah. By the time I saw it over the treetops, like 300 yards away, it was about, I would say, the size of a lemon at arm's length, maybe even bigger.
Okay.
And it had it did this funny thing. As it got really low, it started to, it didn't stop, but it did this turn to my right and then swooped down. So it's not like it came straight down and landed.
Right.
It was moving toward us, and as it was moving toward us, it was also coming down. So at this point, once we start seeing it clearly, I'm like, that's a structured craft of some kind. That's not a hot air balloon. That's not an airplane. And I, because I've been through this before, but I would only have this periodic awareness of it, I knew what it was. All of a sudden, I was like, I had a premonition.
Okay, so you're a multiple abductee. You've been abducted many times, right?
That's right. Many times since early, early childhood.
All right, so this craft, in front of all these witnesses, Adam, actually landed, right?
Right, so that's what I was trying to say, that, yeah, as it got close and just before it landed, I heard, like, some children started to get really frightened and some were actually screaming and yelling. I was calm because I think at that point when it was that close, they had started to alter my awareness, which was what they would usually do.
Really?
I saw it land about 30 feet away from me, and it hovered, and then it didn't touch the grass. I saw these three.
Okay, excuse me. You're using two terms. You say it hovered and it landed. Landing implies to most people it touched the ground.
No, I meant, I think, well, what I was saying was that just before it landed is what it
hovered.
It hovered close to the ground, and simultaneously I saw legs start to protrude from the bottom of it.
Mm.
So it was very gently coming down, like it just stopped above the ground.
Gotcha.
And then just enough so that these legs could come out. And I remember just standing there transfixed, watching the legs come out and touch the ground.
Actually in shock. And I've had a big close sighting, and it puts you in shock.
At this point, yeah, definitely. I was stunned. I was not particularly feeling like a pitched fear, although, like I said, I was aware the other some of the other children were because some were yelling.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just standing there looking at this thing. Now, at this point, I think I had already slipped into the Oz factor, what they call, where they had altered my awareness, but I was still very awake. It's not like being in a trance. I was very lucid and aware of what was going on.
So you were
it's
conscious.
I wasn't.
Your consciousness
was
working just fine. Okay.
It's just that they had taken away the fear for me and not necessarily as effectively for others.
Okay.
So now this craft is sitting about 30 feet away from me. I see a door. I don't know how else to explain it. A pretty small, like a hatch, opened. And there was this opening in the craft. And the next thing I remember, I saw a bright flash of light. And I don't remember seeing a being get out of the craft through the hatch. But after the bright flash of light dissipated, there was a translucent ball. There was actually three of them. And there was I could see inside it, there was a being. Inside each one, and
holy
they floated.
Smokes.
They floated over the grass toward us. Now I was standing toward the back of the playground near the fence, so there was children surrounding it. You know, there were ones
right.
in the back, way back. So I had a good view, like front on view. And the next memory is that this translucent ball just kept moving up closer and closer to me. Now. At some point in here, as it was moving closer and closer, it got quiet. It got really eerily just quiet. All, you know, the kids that were yelling stopped. And I could see around me that they were frozen like statues. They were switched off. And I couldn't move either. I had this frozen state. That came over me. I was paralyzed.
I completely understand. And by the way, Grant, feel free to ask a question at any point during this you want.
Okay.
Continue. You're frozen.
Well, so I'm essentially paralyzed. I mean, I can't move. Not just paralyzed with fear, but physically can't move my legs. Like a statue. So this is something also, again, I've experienced that before. So I wasn't particularly alarmed by that aspect of it. But this creature got very close to me, and the translucent ball dissipated. It disappeared, and the creature was just standing in front of me. I mean, 2 feet in front of me.
Holy mackerel.
And I was aware that there was communication between me and the being.
Yes.
And I also could see in my peripheral vision there the other two beings were standing near a couple other children. Now, the next thing I remember is that we were moving toward the craft.
Excuse me, I've got to ask. You said there was communication going on. What was imparted to you?
Well, see, that's the thing. I cannot remember it like a conversation, literally word for word.
Okay,
but
that's
I
fine.
Know, but you use that word imparted. I like that word because that's how I felt was that I knew that I was being prompted. Like I knew it was happening. Like this is going to happen. We're going to. In fact, I do remember the words "come with us." We want you to come with us.
Okay, there you go.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And so. I was aware of what was happening. I was very calm. And like I said, it had gotten silent, and the other children were very spaced out at that point.
We've got to keep this short. Did you go with them?
Well, that's pretty much it. Yeah, I mean, I remember going in the craft, and I remember coming back, but I don't remember being on the craft. And then the last memory is standing there, and I remember coming to full awareness, and we're all just staying there, and it lifts up and leaves exactly the same way it came. It drifted off very slowly, and I remember the teacher, this is the last point, the teacher saw it because she came out And I think she was inside looking through the window because she came out and she was in a panic and she rushed us all in. She said, come in, come inside. And she was standing by the window and she was freaking out. She was really upset.
All right. I'm going to have to do a whole show with you, which I promise I will do. In the meantime, I want to move on to the other one that you had.
Okay.
And this,
right.
You went through, I hear, a brick wall. You actually went through a brick wall. Is that true?
Yeah, that is correct. That is correct.
A creature took you through a brick wall? And more than that, I understand there was a witness to it. Is that true?
That is true. There was a witness to it.
All right, lay it on me.
Well, this was a daytime event. I was in school. I was in the eighth grade. And I was upstairs. It was a two-story grade school. And I was sitting in the classroom, and suddenly I had what I don't know how else to describe except as a premonition, an awareness that I was going to have an event. I was going to be visited. When I would have a visitation, I would have a premonition beforehand.
Interesting.
And I got the message in my head, almost like an instruction, an order. Mm-hmm. Go downstairs to the bottom level, which was actually the basement level of the building, which mm-hmm. was really kind of creepy down there. It was dark. And it was like this old building from like the early part of the century. And I was scared to go down there. But I went down there. And I was just waiting in the hallway, and I knew at that point that I was going to be visited. And I remember standing there in the hallway and looking down the hallway, and this ball of light appeared. It was different from the other one. It wasn't translucent. It was solid ball of light, and it was about the size of a basketball, and it was moving up the hallway slowly toward me. And I remember just standing there, frozen, transfixed, not afraid, but it got right up, came right up to me. Again, there was this communication, and I remember specifically, it said, come with me, follow me. There was a janitorial closet which jutted out into the hallway. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to explain, but anyway, it was like an L-shaped hallway. You had to walk around the janitorial closet to get through this hallway. So we walk into the janitorial closet, and I didn't know what the heck we were doing going in there, but we walked to the back of the closet. The being communicates with me again, just standing there. We're going to do this. We're going to go in a classroom. So I had been co-opted to assist in abductions. I don't know if I said that earlier. And this was from the time I was very young, and Bud Hopkins had told me I was one of the first cases of that he had ever come across. So this is what I'm describing. And it was a multiple abduction out of the school. But I'm standing in the janitorial closet, and as I'm standing there in front of this being, I see the janitor come in the closet, and he's fully awake and lucid. And then all of a sudden, he sees me standing there next to this creature, and I see the scared look on his face.
Well, yeah.
And he's just standing there stunned, right?
Well, yeah, of course.
And me and the being, I saw the being turn into a ball of light. I turned into a ball of light, and we teleported through the wall. And this is not the part that the janitor witnessed necessarily, because I think he was switched off at that point. But just to say real quick, we went down around the hallway into a classroom. A student was taken out of a classroom, and then we teleported through a lower window up into a craft which was hovering over the school. I don't remember being on the craft again. I do, however, have a lot of memories where I do remember being on a craft. And this particular incident, I don't. But I remember coming back, and this is the part that you wanted to hear about. When
right.
we came back, we did not turn into a ball of light. We approached this brick wall, which I said this hallway was in this L shape.
Right.
So when we went through this wall, this inside wall of the janitorial closet was exposed to the hallway. So we just walked through this wall, and then I remember seeing the janitor standing there, and then the being left. He teleported through the wall. I came back into full consciousness and left the janitorial closet. And the next day, the janitor came up to me, and he said, I saw you yesterday. He said, I saw you in the janitorial closet. You came through that wall with some sort of a strange creature. And he was freaking me out because he had never even spoken to me before. I didn't know this guy.
Well, imagine, said, I mean, by now you'd been through several abductions. Imagine the poor janitor. It's not every day you see a school child transported through a brick wall.
He was terrified, and he just said, you're in danger.
Yeah, I've got
you're
that.
In danger.
Yeah, through a brick wall, my God. All right, this janitor... and these stories, I mean, there's so much public witnessing going on with all of this that you would think it would be, I don't know, one of the biggest UFO stories in the world with witnesses.
Or you know what?
What?
I'm sorry, I didn't. Did I cut you off?
No, you didn't. You said, you know what? Well, and I said, what?
Bud Hopkins, it just made me think of what he told me when I worked with him in the 90s. He said, even he remarked, he said, well, that's unusual, witnessing. And I said, well, I've had so many events, though. Like, I have a near photographic memory, and I have memory of hundreds of events going back to early childhood. And I said, I know that it's not uncommon, actually, to have witnessing. And David Jacobs talks about that. It's just that most people don't come forward, and you have to remember, this was the 70s. I was a little kid. I didn't know that this was even happening to anyone else, and that janitor scared me. It wasn't like I was. I remember telling my father. I said, I thought I saw a creature in the house. It was like, it was just a dream. It was just a dream, Adam, So I stopped talking about it. That's the thing. I didn't know who was I going to report it to.
I get it. So in other words, all of this happened to you all your life, beginning at about what age?
Well, my earliest memory of an event, I was actually in the crib.
Crib? All right, listen, I'm going to have to leave you now, and I'm going to thank you, and we're going to do a whole show together, okay?
Okay.
All right. Adam, thank you very, very much for joining us. It's not every day that you get a kid. Actually, a grown-up now, who was seen walking through a brick wall. It just doesn't happen with brick walls. Anyway, my guest coming up in a moment, Grant Cameron, I'm sure, is going to have lots to say about this. You're listening to Midnight in the Desert.
No dark sarcasm in the classroom.
If you could read my mind, love, what a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old-time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet, you know that ghost is me. And I will never be set free as long as I'm a ghost you can't see.
Midnight matters are best handled by those that understand how to move in the darkness, like Art Bell. To call the show, please dial 1-952-CALL-ART. That's 1-952-225-5278.
Well, all right. Adam obviously had a very great deal to say, and it was not served by the time we gave him. It was very short, so we'll have him back for a full show, depend on that. In the meantime, though, here comes Grant Cameron. And Grant, you originally, I guess, you spent, 37 years looking into the role of government and intelligence agencies and things like that, and somehow made a switch to researching abductions. How did that happen?
Well, basically what happened is I had a, what it was called, I call a download experience that occurred in 2012.
Yes.
In February, I had this experience, but the main thing that made me move was sort of the frustration of spinning your wheels, not getting anywhere, and suddenly realizing that the president knows what's going on. The Appropriations Committee knows what's going on. The intelligence agencies know what's going on, but they're never going to tell you. And so suddenly realized, it dawned on me that if you really want to know what's going on with UFOs, I mean, you can watch stuff fly around the sky and count how many green ones there are, how many fast ones and slow ones and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And you're never going to learn anything about what's going on because it really doesn't tell you anything. Mm-hmm. It's not until you actually do what Travis Walton did, is run up to one and flag it down and have it take you on board. It's not until you talk to somebody who's been inside the ship or who has interacted with the beings who are behind the UFO phenomena that you're going to learn what's going on, because the government's never going to tell you. The intelligence agencies aren't going to tell you, and the experiencers are going to tell you.
Okay, well, I know Travis. I've interviewed him multiple times. No doubt I will again. In fact, he did agree to an interview, and his story is incredible, just amazing. Sounds like you made your move for about the same reason I did. I was talking about politics. I couldn't stand it anymore. It was frustrating. One day I just stopped and I started talking about things like this because, well, because they interest me. So, sounds like the yeah. same reason. But you said you had a download experience. Now,
yeah. What happened to me was, and my most dramatic event was I had the UFO sighting, 1975, and you had a dramatic one as well. And it's hard to explain to people who haven't had it, but right. it basically changes your life. I mean, like, I fell off the edge of the earth when I saw this thing. I just couldn't believe that I'd actually seen it, and it was up close, and there was no doubt. I didn't really know exactly what it was, but I knew it was nothing that was on this planet. And so that was my first dramatic experience. The second one was when I had this download experience. I'm sitting watching Colin Andrews, who is the guy who invented the term crop circles, and he's giving a lecture in Phoenix, Arizona at UFO Congress. I go to the lecture. I'm not interested in the lecture. The only reason I went was because Colin Andrews was giving the lecture, and he's a high profile figure from ufology. I figured I'd pay him the respect. I'm in there. I'm sort of not paying attention. He's talking about consciousness and crop circles, and his theory was that 80% of all crop circles, he was financed by Lawrence Rockefeller to do the find out who is behind the crop circles. And he came to the determination that 80% of crop circles are created by hoaxes, 20% are real, created by some sort of alien force. And this lecture that he gave was saying that the 80% that are hoaxed are also being controlled by the aliens, that the aliens are telling the hoaxers what to put down.
And do you think that's true, 80% hoaxed?
Well, I mean, I'm just giving Colin Andrews figure. I'm not an expert on crop
circles. No, I know. I was just asking if you agree with that. I mean, I've seen so many of them, and, yeah, there's a few, I don't know, kind of funky ones, but yeah. there are, most of them are gorgeous beyond
Beautiful.
Understanding yeah. of how they could have been made by a bunch of guys with boards and chains.
Yeah, the ones I saw some here in Canada in the late 1980s, and I was floored when I saw how these things were woven, how the wheat is all sort of woven together and stuff. So I was very impressed by it. But
I'm so sorry, I didn't even ask. You're a tasty Canadian?
Yes, I am. I live just north of the North Dakota border, and that's how I got involved. Was that North Dakota had 300 nuclear weapons and Minuteman III nuclear weapons with 10 warheads. And they, in 1975, they put in 100 new weapons in North Dakota to shut down, to shoot down Russian missiles.
Right.
And that's exactly when, on my side of the border, about 25 miles from the border, when they put these 100 new weapons to shoot down Russian missiles,
yes.
that suddenly all these sightings started. And they went on for a year from February of 1975 till November of 1975 when they started taking the nuclear weapons out of North Dakota because of a treaty they had made with the Russians.
Isn't that something? There have been, I'm sure you're aware, there have been many sightings over silos, and it's gone further than that, Cameron. They've actually gone into launch sequence.
Yeah, and then when you take a look at some of the stuff now we know behind the scenes is, for example, the big one was the Malmstrom one, the 10 missiles that were shut down at Malmstrom Air Force Base in 1967.
Yes, sir.
And we now know that, Robert Salas, who was in the command module down below when this happened, is an experiencer. He's a lifetime abductee. And it's almost like the aliens had one of their own guys inside the thing. It was like their own spy. So you start looking at the intricacies of the UFO phenomena, and you realize it's much more complex than you originally think.
And it's not an American phenomena only. The Russians had their own big deal with a launch sequence actually beginning. I don't know if you know about that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's what the aliens are just basically doing, is they are sending signals. They are sending signals that maybe you don't know what's going on, I don't know what's going on, but the people in government, I'm absolutely sure when they shut down a launch site like that, or when they leave a dead cow a couple miles downrange from a nuclear power plant or a place where they're building nuclear weapons, I'm sure the message gets across and the government knows exactly what's going on. They know an awful lot more than you and I. And I think a lot of what we see in ufology is just basically signaling. It's almost like I even say with you and me, you had a close encounter, I had a close encounter, and I say to people, I say, why do UFOs have lights on them? We don't have lights on our planes, except for little navigation lights. We don't have lights. Why do UFOs have lights on?
Well, certainly not the ones we want to hide, right?
Yeah, they want you to see it. So
helicopters
are black. If you see a UFO, you're part of the game.
Yeah, helicopters are black for a reason, and stealth aircraft are black for a reason. They don't carry lights, so you're right.
Sure. And so when they abduct people, nobody sees anybody getting abducted. You don't see the ship. So when you see the ship, it's intended for you to see the ship. And I tell people, if you've had a UFO sighting, you're part of the game. You're part of what they're trying to do. And I think what majority of what they're trying to do is just send us signals. They're trying to make us think. They're not giving us the answer. They're making us think, what the heck's going on? Mm-hmm. And the more people think, the more they talk about it, and the more people talk about it, the more it becomes like the gay issue or the gay rights issue, that once you get to the point where everybody's talking about it, everybody's going to make the right decision as to what to do. All they're trying to do is get people talking about it to raise consciousness.
Okay, I don't know about your analogy, but you're right about one thing. Once you have seen something close up, either had an encounter, been abducted, or had a craft, in my case, 150 feet above me, your life is never the same.
Exactly.
All right, now download.
So I'm in this lecture. I'm not really paying attention. And as I said, for 37 years, I'd gathered material together and done documents and lectures and stuff like that. And suddenly it happened, and it happened instantaneously. Three figures, three different items popped into my head instantaneously at the same time, and they came with absolute certainty. People who describe download experiences will talk about this absolute certainty. You don't have to check this. You don't have to go research this. This is the answer. This is how it works. You're absolutely certain. And the other thing that comes with this great sort of excitement for 2 days, I just was vibrating for 2 days after this happened. And what came to me was three things that I gathered together, but I'd never put them together. I'd never figured out how they work together. So he's talking about consciousness. And in 2012, I couldn't have cared less about consciousness. I couldn't have spelled the word. I had no interest in it whatsoever. And suddenly what happened was, I had chased the Canadian government. The early 1950s, there's a top secret Canadian government document that I had quoted, Stanton Friedman has quoted, and we've talked about it endlessly. It's a legitimate top secret Canadian government document from November of 1950, where the Canadians go to the Americans and they're asking the American officials, what's the deal with flying saucers? And they're told, flying saucers are for real. It's the most highly classified subject in the United States. There's a small group headed by Dr. Vannevar Bush who's trying to figure out what's going on, and that the subject is of tremendous significance to the Americans. When this download, the first piece of the download came to me, it was the very next line in that document, and the very next line in the document said, and we were also told by American officials that other things might be associated with the flying saucers, such as mental phenomena. And the Americans aren't doing very well because they've said if we're working on the problem, they're willing to exchange credentials channels and talk to us. And this is the two classified channels. And suddenly I realized that this was very important because in 1950, there was nobody talking to aliens. The first contactees would not appear until a couple days after the detonation of the hydrogen bomb in November of 1952. The first abductees were not Betty and Barney Hill. That was in the 1960s. In 1950, November 1950, nobody was claiming to be talking to aliens.
Okay, I'm going to have to ask you, slow down. Just slow down. I want you to back up a little bit. What you said was exceptional about the communication to the Canadian government officials. So I'm going to ask you, who was told what you just said?
The material came through the Canadian Embassy in Washington, D.C., through the military liaison, whose name was Arnold Wright. He was the guy that went down through intelligence channels and talked to high-level officials in the Defense Department in the United States.
Okay, so Arnold Wright told you this?
Arnold Wright told it to Wilbur Smith, who ran the Canadian government flying saucer program from 1950 to 1954. Wilbur Smith put it in a top-secret document, which was a part of the Department of Transport flying saucer investigation, which took place for the 4 years from 1950 to 1954.
Kind of like our Blue Book.
Yes, exactly. And it was shut down in 1954, but this top-secret memo was Stanton Friedman forced this out in 1978 when the Canadians released their documents. They released all their files. This top-secret document was found in those files, and the Canadian government does not deny that this is a legitimate top-secret document.
Wow. Wow. So in Canada, can you do what we do here and submit what is, in essence, a Freedom of Information request and get?
Yes. Yes. It's called an access to information here.
Okay. Have you done so?
Oh, we've most of the stuff has been filed and stuff has been brought out. This is how it came out. These files were forced out. The defense documents were brought out. The research department documents, the scientific documents. The Canadians released their stuff back in the 1970s. And after that, we really don't know who in the Canadian government is involved or what's going on. But yes, all that stuff was filed early on. We had our access to information request stuff going on long before the Americans had it.
Okay. All right. Now, let me stop you here. I would love to see those documents. Where are they now?
It's around. It's on the internet. It's on my website. The top secret.
Okay, what is your website?
PresidentialUFO.com.
Okay, PresidentialUFO.com. That's not hard. So the document is there. Thank you. Now,
yes.
Before we lose it, I want to go back to Adam Ambrose and the two stories he told, and I would like to get your reaction to them.
He's telling similar stories to what a lot of people. He referred to the aerial 1994 aerial sighting, where 62 school children in Rhodesia saw this UFO that had landed, and all these kids were getting communication from the aliens, and they were getting environmental messages.
Right, but this was here, not there. He referred to that incident.
He referred to that one. That's famous. Now, of course, Adam's story is going to come down to whether he's got the witnesses. The aerial one, they have quite a few of these witnesses, and one by the name of Emily Trim has now even come forward. I saw her in Brantford, Ontario, about a month ago. She's come forward with all the paintings. She suddenly was able to do all these paintings and is now the first of these young school children who has come forward. So if you have Adam on, you have to make sure you have another one of the school children.
Well, actually, Adam has done a whole series of drawings from his memory, and I understand they're available. We'll get that when we do a show with him, but, you know, his story sounded pretty legit to me.
Yeah, it has all the main factors. Like he talked about the Oz factor, where time and space seems to stop. This was described in the John Lennon sighting, where John Lennon has his sighting. May Pang, who was with him, talks about this effect where all the people in the apartments around looking off this penthouse where they were. Nobody seemed to be home. Everybody seemed to have disappeared. The people on the balcony below her didn't come up. It was like time and space had stopped. So this Oz effect is quite common. What Adam is describing is commonly described by people going through walls. And we now sort of understand some of this stuff. Like the idea of going through walls is not a big mystery anymore. We now know, for example, in science that for every piece of matter, there are 1 × 10²² pieces of space. That matter is all space. It's held together by electromagnetic fields. And so if you're an alien and you understand this, that everything is space, if you have a person who's all space and a wall who's all space, all you have to do is know how the electromagnetic fields work, and you can put somebody through a wall. I don't think this is a real big mystery about people going through walls anymore. And almost everybody that's abducted numerous times will describe the fact that they go through a window or through a wall, or that the aliens come through walls. This is pretty common, what Adam is describing here. His big thing is, are there other witnesses to what he had seen?
Apparently so. There's a janitor, if he's still alive. There would be the other school children, if they want to talk about it. And if their memories had not been wiped of this incident, all of that, right?
Yeah. It's a major story. I mean, he said 50 to 70 kids. I mean, that's a major story.
Yes, it is.
With major witnesses.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Was his story... And remember, he said he had been abducted since he was in the crib. I didn't pursue that, but I will with him. But obviously, all his life.
Almost all experiencers will describe this.
Really?
We call them lifers. I mean, if you've been abducted, it's almost never when you're 20 years old that you get abducted one time. General pattern is that if a person describes an abduction, you go back. If you do the regressions, you'll find out it's been going on their entire life.
Okay, Grant. Another question for you. Is it possible to know if there is a general thing that these creatures, these other beings, want from us? In other words, is there any common thread in abductions that you can talk about that would make us perhaps understand why they're occurring?
Well, you have the messages that they're giving us. You have the hybrid program, which is very common, where people describe the hybrid babies, that their sperm or the eggs are being taken. That's very common that's going on. And then you have these messages. A lot of experiencers will talk about seeing the screen on board the ship, and they're showing these environmental devastation scenes where the world is being destroyed, and we're given the message about the fact that we were destroying the planet, that we're environmentally doing damage to the planet, and that we have to stop this. In the early years, the messages came across were the nuclear weapon messages.
Mm-hmm.
And the other message that is given is one of the more common ones, is this oneness message, that we have to understand that everything is connected, everything is alive, and everything is one. Everything is connected. That is a big message that they put across to a number of the experiencers.
Mm-hmm. I saw, and the world's climate expert, I believe it was Sunday on CNN, regarded as the world's chief climate expert. And he said that if we don't do anything in 50 years, it is now known that we will have a 10-foot rise of our oceans. Now, they can show a picture of New York City, Grant, and show what it would look like with 10 more feet of water. And, Grant, there is not much New York City left. And that applies to all the coastal cities of the world. So maybe they better get busy pretty quickly doing a little messaging about what's going on with the planet's weather. I'll tell you what, hold on, Grant. We're going to break here. Can you imagine that? 50 years, 10 feet. 10 feet of ocean rise. You know what that's going to look like? It's not going to look like cities. It's going to look like ocean. I'm Art Bell. This is Midnight.